The U.S. dollar has lost 85% of its value since the 70s, when the dollar decoupled from gold, and the government seems bent on continuing the tradition. Charlie Kirk here. From now until after the elections, the government can print as much money as they want. The last time they did that, inflation went up 9%. Gold is the only asset that has proven to withstand inflation. Invest in gold with Noble Gold Investments. You will get a 24-karat, 1/4 ounce gold standard coin for free. Just use promo code Kirk. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com. That's noblegoldinvestments.com, the only gold company I trust. Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, David Sacks joins us. Really brilliant commentary. And then how should you react to a man, 6'2" man, who joins a sorority? Well, Kappa Gamma, the national organization, says it's perfectly fine that a man can watch women undress and be allowed in a sorority. There's nothing you can do about it. And he gets sexual pleasure from it. Email us freedom@charliekirk.com. Get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Start a high school or college chapter today at tpusa.com. Become a member today at members.charliekirk.com. That is members.charliekirk.com. As always, you can email us freedom@charliekirk.com. I want to hear from you directly and text this episode to your friends. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the Loan Experts I Trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. I am currently taking a course taught by Michael Anton, who I want to have back on the show, on Machiavelli. And it is really in-depth. I'll tell you, the other people taking the class with me, they are very smart. And as you study Machiavelli, you realize that he's portrayed incompletely by most people. I mean, if you ask somebody in politics, oh, what does it mean to be Machiavellian? They say, oh, well, ends justify the means. That is true. That's in there. Or we must throw out antiquity and enter in modernity. That's also there. Let's understand the most famous book that Machiavelli wrote, The Prince. Machiavelli was basically writing this as a job interview. Machiavelli was in the government of Florence at a very young age, 28, 29. Basically lost his job and he wanted to get hired again as a bureaucrat. Very well-paying job back then. He wanted a job with the Medici family. And so the whole book is basically written to the Medici family. Hey, here's everything I know. Here's how you govern. Here's how you rule. And what Machiavelli, whether he realized that at the time, and Michael Anton argues, yes, he did, he was a philosopher. And very rarely do you ever come across someone who can be called a philosopher. The depth, the complexity of his writing is, it's beyond just how some people summarize it. But Machiavelli certainly, the more you understand it, you realize that the left-wing regime uses several principles of Machiavelli as a way to win. Somebody says here, they emailed us, Charlie, frankly, the right, our side, is worthless in a fight. We play by the rules and worry about others. Dems suffer no such problems. Just by an FBI, just an FYI, they're coming after all of us. The conservative movement would do very well to embrace the spirit of Machiavelli, as detailed in The Prince, if we want to win. This story, I think, touches on it perfectly. It's a story that shows how indifference, neutrality, is actually losing. The Postmillennial reports at thepostmillennial.com just one of several of these stories of how the gender and the sex fight is coming into the courts. And judges and the courts in red America are woefully unprepared for this fight. We talked to this story before of Artemis Langford. Now, Artemis Langford looks like a white Michael Orr. Like you could be a right tackle for the Baltimore Ravens. Like 260 pounds, 6'2". obviously has deep-seated mental problems. I hope Artemis finds a counselor to help him through that. But instead of dealing with his mental problems in private, like mature adults do, he wants the rest of the world to suffer and be uncomfortable because of his deep-seated mental problems. It's one thing to have mental issues. That's understandable. Some people do, and I feel sorry for you. I have compassion for you. It's another thing to say the rest of the world must also suffer simultaneously because I also have mental issues. So Artemis Langford, who is a biological male, the guy towers over these women, demands that he is able to become a sorority sister at the University of Wyoming. So several of these college students, females, brought a lawsuit against Kappa Kappa Gamma, KKG, which is supposed to be all about sisterhood, over the policy allowing a biological man into the sisterhood. That case has now been rejected by the U.S. District for Wyoming, and the sisters of the sorority will now be forced to allow a man entry into the all-female group. Artemis Langford reportedly watched the college girls undress, sometimes sporting an erection while doing so. The sorority sisters didn't like it, but Kappa Kappa Gamma policy is that men who claim to be women are women enough to be part of the sisterhood. So basically, we are now forcing 50% of the population to let their social lives be dominated by disgusting, mentally ill, neurotic, predatory freaks. This person, Artemis Langford, is a neurotic freak. And the courts say, well, we don't take stances on gender. Not taking a stance on gender is taking a stance on gender. And so in the University of Wyoming, in the red state of Wyoming, they are subjecting these young ladies to a form of sexual abuse, court-mandated sexual abuse in the name of trans rights. This is happening all across the country, and not just in sports, in changing rooms and locker rooms and sororities. And you might say, well, Charlie, where are the feminists? This is kind of like a common take. Where are the feminists? The feminists support this. Some feminists speak out, but most feminists support this. Why? Because at the root of feminism is that women should act more like men. That was always the argument. That was Betty Friedan's feminine mystique. That women will be happier if you freeze your eggs. That women will be happier if you run the companies. That women will be happier if you become more like men. It is only natural that eventually that women become men. So the next step of feminism, third and fourth wave feminism, is that women will be happier if you literally be a man. Now, we used to say, when I used to go to college campuses, that feminism is all about hating men. I have to update that. Feminism is all about wanting to become men. It is the abolition of women. C.S. Lewis famously wrote the book Abolition of Man. This is the abolition of women. This is why they hate sororities, because they're female-only spaces. And parents, legislatures in Wyoming, the governor of Wyoming, they're all just kind of sitting around and they're saying, well, I guess we have to let the freak in. No, you don't. He should be arrested, put in prison. And women are agreeable. Men are more disagreeable. Good luck. You're going to try to tell me that some freak would try, who is a woman, try to be going to a fraternity? He would be mocked, ridiculed, made fun of for good reason. I support that mockery, by the way. If a woman who thinks that she is a man wanted to join a fraternity, that person would be made fun of so much, bullied so much, crying so much, they would get themselves out. These girls should bully this freak. But they won't. Because they say, well, maybe we should have compassion for the predator who's getting an erection while watching other girls undress, Artemis Langford. Where do we draw the line? Men wouldn't put up with this, actual men. You see, if these girls, you could get this man out of your sorority. You just have to treat him poorly. Make fun of him. Be like, you're a fat freak. What are you doing here? Girls do that to other girls. They don't do that to men. Girls are perfectly capable of bullying other girls. They're the best at it. They're like way more savage than men. But girls bullying girls because there is a physical intimidation factor. This guy is like Shrek. It's like he could just take one of them and crush their skull. I mean, that's sick. I'm sorry. That is sick. He towers over these young ladies, obviously a predator. And he's obviously sexually attracted to them, watching them undress with an erection, and the judge says, meh. Why do we need to protect women? Protect women? Eh. This is going to happen everywhere. This is going to happen with preschoolers. It's happening in sports. It's happening all across the board. One way to stop it is to make the trans freaks feel uncomfortable. Nothing physical. Just make fun of them. Say, you're not welcome here. You're not welcome in our sorority. Go away. And some people say, well, Charlie, that's not nice. You shouldn't be nice to predators. Fun fact. Strong Cell is amazing. I got to tell you, the combination of NADH, CoQ10, and collagen is really something. You know, people ask me, they say, Charlie, how do you keep your energy up? How do you just keep on pushing? Like, part of it is diet, nutrition, but I'll be honest, I take supplements really seriously. Fact check me on this. You can say, oh, Charlie, I'm going to fact check you. Type this into your search engine. NADH. Just type it in. What does it tell you? It might tell you that it is the secret to living long, anti-aging properties, more energy. Well, all of that is being proven in more and more clinical trials. NADH is a precursor so that your mitochondria can remain healthy and vibrant. The elites, a lot of billionaires, people with a lot of money, they spend a ton of money on NAD. It's a fact. NAD just might be your secret weapon for more energy. I take NAD every single day. I could tell you that NADH compared with CoQ10, the trials show very, very good things. I don't take my word for it. I mean, honestly, my word should be good for something, but fact check me. Look at it. And if you do it over 30 days, you'll see an increase in energy. I wake up better than ever before. NAD can help you potentially, again, fact check me on this, with depression, anxiety, other issues that you might be dealing with. It is nature's gift to you, so you might have extra energy and mental clarity. You guys can use promo code Charlie for 20% off. It's strongcell.com/Charlie. NAD might be nature's secret weapon for you. I love it. I take it every single day. Try it for at least 30 days to see the maximum benefit, and let me know. Has NAD helped your life? Strongcell.com/Charlie. Check it out. Strongcell.com/Charlie. So you go to KappaGamma.org, which is the organization that's allowing the freak in the sorority. And their mission statement is this. Kappa unites women to learn, grow, and inspire positive change. Join us in dreaming boldly and living fully. One thing I've learned dealing with the left is that if you ask them to define their terms, they can't. So what is a woman, Kappa Gamma? What is a woman? I would like an official statement from KappaGamma.org. What is a woman? Matt Walsh led the charge on this beautifully. Same way they can't define racism. They can't define any of this. They can't define democracy. They use these words so frequently, they don't actually know what they mean. So KappaGamma.org, who's allowing this man in there who is getting off sexually being around women on dress, saying you must be in there. Remember, these girls were suing the private organization. University of Wyoming says, oh, there's nothing we could do about it. Yeah, you could call the local sheriff and arrest him for being a weirdo, but they wouldn't do that, obviously, because they're weak. Because we've become a very, very weak country. This guy should not be around women. You know, it used to be illegal to do that. It used to be illegal to go into women locker rooms and to be a perv. It used to get you arrested. Now it's perfectly acceptable under trans rights. So KappaGamma.org says Kappa unites women to learn, grow, and inspire positive change. What is a woman? And the reason why there was no traction on this is because all of the female alumni of Kappa Kappa Gamma, women are super agreeable. Men and women are different. So women were probably just like, well, I'm not happy about that, but I'm really afraid to do something about it. And they are. They get so angry about Donald Trump, blow up the White House, Madonna, the whole thing, you know, the pink hat thing. But when an actual man wants to be in their sorority, meh. And by the way, these seven young ladies who sued are heroines. They deserve our credit. I believe they were on Megyn Kelly's program or Lauren Ingram's program. I remember they were on one of the two recently. Either Ingram or Kelly have done a great job. And where are the parents? Where are the dads? MIA. It just doesn't matter. You see, I'm not allowed to say this. I'm not allowed to say what I want to say. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not allowed to say what I want to say, so you have to read my mind. Telepathy. Got to read my mind. I have a daughter, and the rest, you just have to read my mind. Not allowed to say it, or else producer Andrew's going to just, he's just going to jump through the window. I'm not allowed to, so I'm definitely not saying it, so you have to read it. Okay, that's it. That's the end of that segment. Judge Alan Johnson dismissed the case Westenbrook versus Kappa Kappa Gamma Fraternity. The ruling from Johnson was that it was the right of the group to redefine the word woman to include men. The court says that we will not define woman today. We laughed when Ketanji Brown Jackson said she couldn't define a woman. That is the entire American legal profession right now. Oberlin college administrators caught on secret recording reprimanding head lacrosse coach for defending women's sports. California attorney general sues Chino Valley schools over policy requiring parental notification if a kid wants to transition their gender. So they say it's basic freedom of association. So why can't conservatives have that? Well, there's never freedom of association when the right wants to control who teaches in our schools or who we can make cakes for. Somebody emailed us, Charlie, I will say it. Another one emailed freedom@charliekirk.com. Charlie, I can read your mind. Wow, you guys are very talented. Very, very talented. I could just see the Media Matters article. Charlie Kirk asks audience to read mind. I'm not saying it. Nope. They can't ban you if you don't say it. And the courts say, well, we don't take a position on what a woman is. That is your American legal profession. How broken is the country? Time and time and time again, they will not say what a woman is. You know, when I go out and I speak and I say, you know, in college they teach you that men can give birth and everyone laughs and, you know, these $100 million donors to Harvard will tell me, oh, Charlie, they don't teach that. I say, oh, yeah, they do. Wake up. Your American legal system, the judges in charge of your society will say, we don't take a position on what a woman is. Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. And like many of you, I'm a busy guy balancing family, show, travel, and TPUSA. When I needed a mortgage, I went to my friends, Andrew Delray and Todd Avakian at Sierra Pacific. They were amazing. And look, I had some complicated stuff. Don't need to go into the details. They handled it personally. Call them if you have an aging family member, for example, that needs some financial relief. Ask them about a reverse mortgage. If you're self-employed and are finding it difficult to qualify because of that, they have my 100% full and complete endorsement. Call them and help you prepare. I'm telling you, anything mortgage related, please call them and not the big woke banks. Go to andrewandtodd.com. That's andrewandtodd.com. Fill out the quick form and they will get back to you with answers. Call them at 888-888-1172, andrewandtodd.com. They're good friends of mine. Full and complete endorsement. If you are a first-time home buyer, renting and want to be, they'll call and help you prepare. Check it out, andrewandtodd.com. That is andrewandtodd.com. Fill out the quick form and they'll get you back with answers, andrewandtodd.com. Joining us now is one of the smartest and clearest thinkers in the country who has been speaking up more and more on politics, and I really enjoy his commentary. David Sacks, who is a legendary entrepreneur and really sees things clearly. David, thank you for taking time to join our program and also the All In podcast. Want to make sure we plug that as well. So David, I caught a clip of yours this last weekend. If that's okay, I want to play it because what you said was super smart. You talked about the disconnect between Republican primary voters and the people running for the Republican nomination, as illustrated by our event we hosted a couple weeks ago. Let's play cut 60.
There is polling by CNN that a majority of Americans have now turned against the idea of giving more aid to Ukraine. I'm sure that number is much higher in the Republican Party. If you remember, there was an event, Charlie Kirk, who is a conservative influencer, has an event called Turning Point USA, and they did polling of their conference attendees. The number one issue that everyone agreed on was Ukraine. 95% of the attendees opposed giving more aid to Ukraine. Donald Trump only got 85% popularity. So the base of the party is even more united against Joe Biden's policy in Ukraine than they are on loving Trump. Okay, that tells you something. And yet, Vivek is the only candidate on that stage that was willing to raise his hand, like aggressively, like full-throatedly, not kind of a half-hearted, to saying that he did not agree with Biden's policy on Ukraine.
Very smart. David, elaborate on that. I have several questions, but the floor is yours.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the base of the party is very well informed about this war, and I think they understand it. I think they understand that this is a proxy war of choice that's turning into a forever war, another quagmire for the United States. They're very much opposed to spending, you know, over $100 billion that's already been appropriated in Ukraine when we have so many festering problems at home. They would like, I think, an American president to focus on problems here at home and spend our limited money here at home. And I think they also understand the ways in which the Biden administration caused this war. This is a war that was easily avoidable, that was caused by the United States seeking to bring NATO right up to Russia's borders. And the Biden administration could have found any one of many off-ramps in 2021 or early 2022 to avoid this war. And it didn't. It courted this conflict. So here we are. And I think finally, the base of the party understands that it's not going well. Even the mainstream media has finally had to acknowledge that this Ukrainian counteroffensive is failing, that the losses have been staggering. The reports from the battlefields have been sobering. And now you see the blame game and the finger pointing between the U.S. and its Ukrainian allies, where they're blaming each other for this failure. So I think the party, the base of the party, is well informed. It understands what's happening, and it would like to see this conflict brought to an end. And yet there's hardly any difference between most members of the Republican elite. So candidates like Christie, Haley, Pence, and Scott, I mean, they basically have no qualms with the Biden policy of endless war for, you know, as much as it takes for as long as it takes. Their only complaint about Biden really is that he's not doing enough fast enough for them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, unlimited funding forever is still not enough. That's their only complaint. And by the way, this is the position of most of the Republicans in Washington, the, you know, GOP establishment, Mitch McConnell, and, you know, about 2/3 of our elected representatives in Washington. But I think the base of the party is very much on a different page. And so I think eventually this has to play out in the Republican primary.
So you have to help me understand this. And I spoke to Tucker Carlson about this, and he agreed. The caricature or the stereotype that most people have when it comes to politicians is they'll say anything to get elected. So they'll read the room, they'll see where people are, and then they'll kind of conform to the majority opinion, that they're shapeshifters, if you will. This is different, though. If they were actually the political panderers that most people believe politicians are, then they would just kind of say some sort of, you know, oh yeah, Ukraine not going well, let's focus on our country, and then just lie about it. And when they get into office, they'll do something different. But David, for whatever reason, there's a zealotry, an ideological undercurrent here. Is it driven by donors? Is it driven that they actually believe it? Why is it that Vivek Ramaswamy was the only one to put his hand straight up and say no more aid to Ukraine? They know the party is not with them, and yet they are defiantly lecturing them against the will of the party. I don't understand it.
I think there's a couple of things going on. I think one is that there is a difference between what the base of the party thinks and what the elites think, what the establishment thinks. And it's, I don't know if that's because of ideology or whether it's because of the money that's involved. I mean, the defense contractors, the military industrial complex, and, you know, all these different groups that benefit from us spending hundreds of billions of dollars in these forever wars. I mean, I think they're a powerful interest group. They control all the think tanks. I mean, most of the think tanks are funded by the military industrial complex. And so they're putting out a steady stream of propaganda for this war. So I don't know if it's a function of money or ideology, but there is clearly a difference between what the ordinary voter in the Republican primary thinks and what most Republican politicians think. And let's remember, I mean, you had the same dynamic in 2016. One of the reasons why Donald Trump came out of nowhere, yes, to become the Republican nominee is he said, no more Bushes. We had this experience of 2 decades of forever wars in the Middle East that had cost us trillions of dollars and had led to the deaths of millions of people. And, you know, we had thousands of our own casualties and wounded warriors coming back. And Donald Trump said that, you know, no more Bushes, no more of these forever wars. And he was the only Republican on that stage. There were something like 16 primary candidates, and he was the only one to say that. So, you know, I don't know what the mental block is with most Republicans, but they still have not gotten on the same page as the majority of their party.
The calculus, as I can see it, is they see the downside of betraying the capital flows of neoconservatism is much greater than the upside of potentially winning votes, meaning they still want to have a career and give speeches because they know deep down the likelihood of them becoming the nominee is next to zero. So they do not want to break that orthodoxy for a livelihood reason, for a comfort reason, whatever it might be. And so that is one line that won't be crossed. So now we're seeing, David, Vivek Ramaswamy get attacked from every direction. The knives are out for Vivek. And he was saying pretty base things, and his polling was going up. But as soon as he started to articulate his foreign policy, I mean, you know, in the breaks, I read the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Politico. This is a multi-institutional firing squad against the Indian dude with a weird name. And I mean that lovingly. I love Vivek. I mean, he is an existential threat to the regime because he asks heterodox questions about our foreign policy. What's going on here?
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, you really see how much of a uniparty there is when it comes to an issue like this. You have both the Wall Street Journal editorial page, which is supposed to be nominally conservative, and the Washington Post both denouncing Vivek. You've got all of the major media, even again, putatively conservative media that's part of the establishment is denouncing him. And you see that these parties, which we're told never agree on anything, they really march in lockstep and close ranks when someone threatens this, like you said, neocon agenda. The foreign policy establishment has been completely taken over by this neocon wing, and they really close ranks around any threats to it.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, and you saw this, I think, with the types of criticism that people like Nikki Haley and Mike Pence were making against Vivek on that stage. I mean, you had Nikki Haley was repeating this sort of hackneyed talking point that anybody who wants to show judgment and restraint in our foreign policy and limit our involvement and interventions overseas is inexperienced, or weak. I mean, this is the rhetoric that you hear that was then echoed by the Washington Post or Wall Street Journal. But what is it exactly about our foreign policy over the last 20 years that would make anyone want to choose so-called experience? All the people with experiences have gotten everything wrong over the past 20 years. I mean, they got us into Iraq based on a bunch of lies. They kept us in Afghanistan for 20 years. They got us into Syria and Libya. And again, they avoided all of the easily taken actions and off-ramps that would have avoided this war in Ukraine. So what is it about this foreign policy establishment that's so experienced that we should defer to? Again, I'm all in favor of looking at a candidate's track record. But if you look at the track record of people like Nikki Haley, it's a track record of failure. I would much rather bet on the rookie who has fresh ideas, who's not beholden to the past, and who's expressing a correct understanding of our foreign policy choices. And again, this is exactly the choice that the Republican base faced in 2016 when they went with another rookie, Donald Trump. And I think this is the choice that, again, we face today.
So, you're so right. So I'm just flipping through some of the articles here. One of the article headlines, David, makes me laugh. Vivek Ramaswamy is no Henry Kissinger. So wait a second. Who made Henry Kissinger the standard bearer of foreign policy? Like the guy that made China one of the wealthiest countries on the planet, the guy that has supported, neoconservative imperialism in every sovereign country in the Middle East. Like what exactly about that? What they're getting at, though, and you're so right, is this tired old attack vector of inexperience, lack of depth, let the experts take over. David, I do see some promising trends, not on the left. The left is like suspiciously pro-war now. It's making me dizzy. But yeah. I am starting to see the same way that the expert class was challenged post-COVID, the foreign policy expert class, at least on the right, is not taken very seriously. I think that's a healthy development.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the analogy to COVID is a very good one. I think that what happened with COVID is that the American people learned over time that the experts were not to be trusted, these so-called experts, the people who ran our health establishment. They promoted all the wrong policies. We had we had lockdowns, and then they pumped this vaccine that they told us was safe and effective, and it turned out not to work at all. So I think that there's something similar happening. Eyes are being opened to our foreign policy establishment. And I would say that Victoria Nuland is the Fauci of this situation in the same way
100%.
That we learned
yes.
that Fauci was supposed to be preventing pandemics, and instead he was funding gain-of-function research. Victoria Nuland was supposed to be our chief diplomat over there, and instead she was fomenting, you know, coups in Kiev and regime change wars. So, you know, I think we're learning that the people who are supposed to be running our State Department, again, in charge of American diplomacy, are actually creating problems and wars for us to get into.
The right, because of the treatment of Donald Trump, for better or for worse, is more willing to cast aside multi-decade trust of institutions. So the right has an appetite to say, you know what, the generals are also awful because the CDC is awful and Bob Mueller was awful. And so there is a low trust of institutions on the right. I'm not saying that's a great societal indicator, but actually it's probably where we should be. So, David, I mean, you've had to kind of swim in the lanes of people that would call themselves on the left for years. I'm sure you remember being lectured about foreign wars and how it is the liberal position to be against foreign wars, which I sympathize with, actually. I think neoconservatism is disgusting and ugly and awful. I wish the right would embrace that, our leadership would. But what's happened to the rank and file of the left? I know this is something that you probably get a question every so often, but it seems as if the Democrat Party, if you will, is all on board for the no-win war agenda, helping Ukraine. What has changed? Help me understand this.
Well, I think the Democrat Party in general is now the party of the elite, and it's a party of elite institutions. And I think that one of the fundamental differences in worldview between liberals and conservatives is that liberals believe that the way that you understand the world, that you know, what mediates our understanding of the world are these experts. You defer to experts. That's how you understand what's going on. And the experts are basically the people who they say they are, but that wouldn't be that convincing to people. So what they do is they say the experts are the people who come out of these elite institutions and who run these institutions, the people who have these elite credentials. And on the surface, it makes sense, right? The people who are running these elite institutions, they should be the experts. The problem is that there's been kind of this liberal takeover of all of our elite institutions. And so they're all kind of marching in lockstep. And when they're wrong, there is no accountability. There, you know, the media, which is really supposed to hold them accountable, has instead become their Praetorian Guard and will cover up and defend them. And again, we saw this during COVID, that all the people who got everything wrong during COVID, there was no comeuppance or accountability for any of them. And I think we're seeing the same thing now when the foreign policy establishment fails. And really any of these elites, again, there is no accountability for any of them when they get things so horribly wrong.
Yeah, that's so true. There's an article for the Jacobin newspaper or magazine or whatever. The Democrat base just keeps getting richer and whiter. Do you think that there's going to be some potential schism in the Democrat Party? Because in some ways it's a forced marriage. You have the party of Aspen, Sun Valley, Kenny Bunkport kind of married together with the, let's just say, more activist class of, you know, Fulton County. That's not exactly a match made in heaven, right? I mean, the Bernie Sanders AOC types complain about oligarchy and corporate dominance. All the while, the Democrat Party is the party of Harvard, Princeton, Yale, and Stanford. Is that ever going to materialize, or is that kind of forced marriage going to stay as long as, you know, bad man Donald Trump is in the picture?
Well, I think that there's a strong crusader element to crusader zeal to our elites. And there's been what I call the woke neocon fusion.
Yes.
Where if you think about it, our foreign policy and our domestic policy aren't that different. I mean, you basically it's blue state dominance. They want to dominate the red states and impose their
exactly
ideology,
right,
and way of life on both red states and the entire world. I mean, this neocon project is basically a crusade to impose our values on the entire world.
Yes.
Yeah, it's basically liberal hegemony. I mean, but that is the name that they themselves neocons have called it. They want to. It's a type of imperial hegemony in which we impose our values on the entire world, and those values are the values not of the ordinary American, but of our foreign policy establishment and of our, again, elite institutions that are run by all of these people. So I think their party, sort of the party of the ruling elite, might be more stable than we think. I think the schism is going to be within the Republican Party, and you're already seeing that, and you saw it on this debate stage. The question is, are we going to be the party of you know, Oliver Anthony, who in that song, Richmond, North of Richmond, he's really talking about the blob. He confirmed it in an interview with the Free Press. He said, I'm singing about a lot of the older super conservative politicians that brought us into endless war through my entire childhood. That's what he said. So he's talking about the Dick Cheney types and the Donald Rumsfelds and the Mitch McConnells. That's who he's talking about. And, you know, the question is, are we going to be a party of those sort of Bush era neocons? And let's be clear, this is what Nikki Haley and Tim Scott and Mike Pence, they want to restore that. They want a neocon restoration. Or are we going to be the party that appeals to an Oliver Anthony or to a Bryce Mitchell, remember the MMA fighter, who said that I'm not going to fight in any of these politicians' wars. If the war ever comes to my state of Arkansas, I will dig my boots into the ground and fight, but I'm not going to fight for these politicians.
That's right. Or are we a party that appropriates Oliver Anthony and ignores everything he talks about? David Sacks, great commentary. Check in his podcast, All In Podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
Think identity theft won't happen to you? Think again. There's a new victim every 3 seconds in the U.S., over 15 million this year alone, and many don't even know they're victims. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you could miss, even when you monitor your credit. If your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. No one can prevent all identity theft, but everyone can save up to 25% their first year at LifeLock.com/Salem. Identity theft protection starts here.